We think we know the ones we love, our husbands, our wives. We know them, we are them sometimes. When separated at a party, we find ourselves voicing their opinions, their taste in food or books, telling an anecdote that never happened to us but happened to them. We watch their tics of conversation, of driving and dressing, how they touch a sugar cube to their coffee and stare as it turns white to brown, then drop it satisfied into the cup. I watch my own husband do that every morning. I was a vigilant wife. We think we know them. We think we love them. But what we love turns out to be a poor translation, a translation we ourselves have made from a language we barely know. We try to get past it to the original, but we never can. We have seen it all. But what have we really understood? One morning, we awaken. Beside us, that familiar sleeping body in the bed, a new kind of stranger. For me, it came in 1953. That was when I stood in my house and saw a creature merely bewitched with my husband's face. Perhaps you cannot see a marriage. Like those giant heavenly bodies invisible to the human eye, it can only be charted by its gravity, its pull on everything around it. That's how I think of it. That I must look at everything around it, all the hidden stories, the unseen parts, so that somewhere in the middle, turning like a dark star, it will reveal itself at last. The story of how I met my husband, even that's not simple. We met twice, once in our Kentucky hometown and once on a beach in San Francisco. It was a joke for our whole marriage that we were strangers twice. I was a teenager when I fell in love with Holland Cook. We grew up in the same farming community where there were plenty of boys to love. At that age, I was like those Amazonian frogs, bright green, oozing emotion from every pore. But I caught no one's eye. Other girls had boys falling over them, and although I did my hair just like them and ripped the trim off attic dresses and sewed it onto my hems, it did no good. My skin began to feel like clothing I had outgrown. I saw myself as tall and gawky, and as no one ever told me I was beautiful, neither my mother nor my disapproving father, I decided that I must be plain. So when a boy came along who actually met my eyes, who showed up along my walk from school and got himself invited in for a slice of bread, I didn't know what to make of him. I could tell he wanted something. For some reason, I thought it was help on his schoolwork, so I always went to great pains to hide my notebooks and not sit next to him in class. I wouldn't be used like a crib sheet. But of course that wasn't what he wanted. He was always good in school. He never said what he wanted, in fact, not in all the years I knew him. But you do not judge a man by what he says, you judge him by what he does. And one clear bright night in May when we walked by the strawberry patch, he held my hand all the way to Childress. That's all it took. Just the briefest touch, in those days when I wore my nerves outside my skin like lace. Of course, I lost my heart. I was there with Holland in World War II. He loved that I talked like a book and not like any of the other girls, and when the time finally came for him to go into the army, I watched him step onto that bus and head to war. It was a lonely grief for a young girl. It never occurred to me that I could leave as well, not until a government man walked up to our house and asked for me by name. I tromped down in my faded sundress to find a very ruddy and clean-shaven man wearing a lapel pin of the Statue of Liberty in gold. I coveted it terribly. His name was Mr. Pinker. He was the kind of man you were supposed to obey. He talked to me about jobs in California, how industries wanted strong women like me. His words, they were rips in a curtain, revealing a vista to a world I had never imagined before. Airplanes, California, it was like agreeing to travel to another planet. After I thanked the man, he said, "Well then, as thanks, you can do a favor for me." To my young mind, it seemed like nothing special at all. "Now that sounds like the first bright idea you ever had," my father said when I mentioned leaving. I can't find any memory in which he held my gaze as long as he did that day. I packed my bags and never saw Kentucky again.